We're going to be once again continuing our study of the story of the Bible. And today we're going to study two of the great men of the Bible, Abraham and Jacob. And these are two of the men that really begin God's great kingdom here on this earth when He starts His people. Most of us know the story of Abraham and Jacob, and we'll be going through some of the highlights of their life today as we open up this part of the story. You know that Abraham was called from a city called Ur of the Chaldees. And if you look at a map, I think we looked at this map a long time ago. This is sometimes what we call the Fertile Crescent, where actually somewhere between the Tigris and Euphrates River was the Garden of Eden, where everything started. And down here is the city of Ur. Ur was probably one of the largest cities, if not the largest, at the time of Abraham, roughly 2,000 years before Jesus. And this is the city where Abraham grew up. It was a very pagan city. In fact, if you study the little bit of history of Ur that we do know, it was extremely pagan area. And we'll take a look at that. That was the background where Abraham comes from. And him and his father, Terah, and their family, they go up to Haran. And then they go into the Promised Land. And the best thing is that if you think about this, this was the civilization of their day. And from Haran on, it's sort of, in our day and time, we're thinking about the wild, wild west. It was a land they didn't know. And Abraham was called to a land he did not know where he was going or what to expect when he got there. Because this was the sort of the civilization of his day, and this was the wild west that he was called to go into. And of course, we know he did go. And if you look at the promises that God makes to him as he calls him out. But notice how Joshua tells us about Abraham. Joshua was written after the children of Israel have taken the promised land. So it was hundreds of years later. But he reminds the people of their heritage in Abraham. And notice what Joshua says. It said, "The Lord, the God of Israel, long ago your fathers lived beyond the Euphrates. Terah, the father of Abraham, and Nahor, the brother of Abraham, and they served other gods." Abraham came from a very pagan city where even his father, Terah, served other gods. "Then I took your father Abraham beyond the river and led him through all the land of Canaan and made his offspring many." And as the last verse we saw today, and he said, "I am the Lord who brought you out of Ur of the Chaldees." One of the ideas that we see throughout the story of the Old Testament, God refers to himself as the God who has done things for us. He brought Abraham out of Ur, out of Haran, where Terah and his family stopped, and then into the Promised Land. God was always with Abraham. And you see that throughout. And God's always reminding his people, "I'm the God who has done this for you." One of the favorite ways God has of talking to him, of the Israelites, "I am the God that brought you out of Egypt." And we'll see the story of that. And he refers himself over and over, "I'm the God who's provided for you in the past. I'm the God that will provide for you in the future." And we see that in Genesis. And we see that in the story of Abraham. Look at the great promises God makes to Abraham. And this is the stories that we see. "Now the Lord said to Abram," later of course changed to Abraham, "go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you." Now notice how many times God says, this is God speaking, "I will make you into a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great so that you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and and him who dishonors you I will curse. And in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed." Definitely that's, as Paul brings out vividly for us, one of the first times we talk about the Messiah, that Christ would be a descendant of David and fulfillment of these promises that God would give to Abraham and to David. But I want you to think about these great promises that God makes to Abraham. He calls him out of Haran. Now, we know that Abraham was 75 years when he leaves Haran. But Abraham's going to live to be 175 years old. So the people back in those days did not age quite like we do. And so one of the first things that Abraham does when he leaves Haran is there's a famine in the land. So they go down to Egypt. And when they go down to Egypt, Sarah, his wife, is one of the most beautiful women in all the world. Doesn't sound like she's an old woman at all. In fact, Pharaoh, the king, wants to take her to be his wife. So one of the first things Abraham does is he tells Pharaoh that Sarah is his sister, not his wife. One of the very first things we have recorded of Abraham, his acts after he goes into the promised land, is to lie. And he lies to protect himself. And one of the things we see in Abraham's life, we see his great faith, we see his great patience in God, we also see that he was human. He was like us. There were times in Abraham's life where he didn't know what was going to happen. And he takes things into his own hands a little bit. And here he goes down to Egypt. He tells a lie to protect his own life because he's afraid Pharaoh would kill him in order to have Sarah, this beautiful woman, as his own wife. And so we see Abraham, his patience in God, is, if you go through the story, Abraham was told he would have a descendant. But he doesn't have any children. And years go by, years after year, and even God appears to him again. He says, Abraham, you're going to have more descendants than you can count. And Abraham says to God, okay, God, but when? When's this going to happen? I'm getting older. In fact, he gets to be 100 years old before the final promise of Isaac and his son is born. And he raises Isaac and he raises his other son, Ishmael, that was born to his handmaiden, as his children. And Isaac grows up, the son of promise. God has promised Abraham descendants. He's promised him blessings. He's been with him throughout all these years. And then God asks of Abraham what we might think of is almost too much to think about. If you look over to Genesis 22, that what God asks of Abraham is one of those stories that it is hard for us to understand what God does to Abraham. He says to Abraham, take your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him as a burnt offering on one of the mountains, which I will tell you. Now, when you read that, it's just, how could God ask of Abraham? But what he asks of Abraham is even more than what we sometimes think about. It's one thing to ask Abraham, here's Isaac, your son, your only son. Now, he has a son, Ishmael. But the point God is making, this is the son of promise. This is your son by Sarah, your wife. This is the son that everything depends upon. And the Hebrew writer brings that out for us. Notice what it says in Hebrew. It says, by faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, who had been received the promises, was an act of offering up his own son, whom it had been said, through Isaac shall your offspring be named. Now notice that, through Isaac. So in other words, all the promises of God depended upon Isaac. They couldn't come through Ishmael. God had already told him that. If Isaac died, they couldn't come by anybody else. All the promises revolved around Isaac. So what the Hebrew writer says is Abraham was called not only to offer Isaac, but also to offer the very promises that God had given him for these last 30 years. All the covenant with God depended upon Isaac. And God now calls Abraham to sacrifice everything for him. His son, the promises, everything he had lived his whole life for. It's what God calls Abraham to do. And that seems like to us maybe more than what we could even think about if we were called to offer up everything that we have. Not just the son Isaac, but even the promises of God because they dwelt or they were based upon Isaac. But I want you to think with me just a little bit of what Jesus asked us to do. Most of us are familiar with the verses where Jesus comes to his disciples. And notice what Jesus says, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. Whoever would save his life will lose it. Whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. You ever thought about what Jesus is asking of us? To deny ourselves? Last week we looked at the first sin, the sin of Adam and Eve. And that sin basically was choosing self over God. Sin is when we separate ourselves from God by choosing self. Jesus says, you've got to deny yourself and come after me. If you lose your life for me, then you'll what? You will really find your life. And that may be not easy for us to think about, but that's what Jesus asked for us, to give ourselves to him, just the same way that Abraham was called to. Most of us know the two great commands that God gives us. The two great commands is to love God with all of our heart, mind, and soul, and to love our neighbor as ourselves. Have you thought about that second command? Notice what Jesus, when he introduced the second command to us in John 13. A new command I give you, that you love one another, just as I have loved you, you also love one another. Now sometimes we read that pretty quickly, we know we're to love one another, but what does Jesus say? A new command I give you. To love one another was in the Old Testament. So Jesus is changing the command. He's given us a new command. How? As I have loved you. How did Jesus love us? By giving his life for us. Jesus calls us to deny ourselves to the point where we give our lives to each other. Now that's maybe harder for us to think about. How can that be? How can we be called to truly give ourselves one another? To deny ourselves and to give ourselves in that way. It's not easy. And Jesus doesn't always say it's an easy life. But as we see, he will be with us in it. At the end of the story with Abraham, Abraham, we know, goes to the mountain. He actually ties Isaac up. He puts him on the altar and he's ready to put the knife through Isaac's heart. And you know what happens? The angel stops him and there's a little lamb or a goat that he takes from in the bush and he sacrifices it because the Lord provided a sacrifice to take Isaac's place. And notice what it says. So Abraham called the place, the Lord will provide. As he said to this day, on the mount of the Lord it shall be provided. Now that's an amazing thing to think about what he says. He doesn't say, this is the mountain where I passed the test of the Lord. This is the mountain where Abraham stood up and did what he was supposed to. It's all to the Lord. It's the Lord provided for Abraham. This was a test for Abraham, but the Lord provided a way for Abraham to get through it. And so in our lives, may face things in our lives where we don't see how we're going to get through. How could God ask this of us? But God will provide us a way, just as he did Abraham. And sometimes we may not see that, but God is always providing a way. There's a section in Matthew, and here Jesus is talking, they're talking about the rich, and the rich were so blessed, it's hard for a rich man to deny himself. And notice what Jesus says. Truly, truly, I say unto you, with great difficulty, a rich man will enter the kingdom of heaven. Again, I tell you, it's easier for a camel to go through an eye of a needle. It's hard enough for me to put a thread through a needle. I can't imagine putting a camel through there. When disciples heard him say this, they were greatly astonished. Who then can be saved? But Jesus looked at them and said, with man this is impossible, but with God all things are possible. And that's really where we are today in our story. With God, these things are possible. With us, we may not see how we could ever do this. May not see how, if we were called to go to the mountain, how we could ever do what Abraham did. But with God, he will provide us a way. All things are possible. We can do the things that we're called to do. And we see that in Abraham's life. And we see that also in the life of Jacob. Jacob is one that when you start his life, most of us know Jacob was the grandson of Abraham. Abraham's son Isaac had two sons, Esau and Jacob. And they're fighting even before they're born, if you go through the whole story. And so it appears that they fight the whole lives, Esau and Jacob. And when they get a little older, Esau goes out one day and he hunts all day and he comes in and he's really hungry. And so Jacob said, well, I got food here for you, but I want one thing for it. And Esau says, what's that? I want your birthright as being the oldest son. Now, can you imagine selling your birthright for a bowl of soup? But that's what Esau does. Esau is not maybe he's not the guy that you would want to depend on. He just wants instant gratification of a bowl of soup. And so he sells his very birthright for a bowl of soup. But Jacob basically swindles him. But a few years later, it gets even worse. Isaac thinks he's going to die. Now, he doesn't die for another 40 years. But like some of us, he must not have been feeling good that morning and thinks he's going to die. So he calls his two sons in to bless them. And Jacob and Esau hear this. So Jacob takes Esau's place. And he deceives his father. He lies to him in order to get the blessing of the older son. So we see Jacob swindling his brother, lying to his father. And because of these actions, Esau's had enough with Jacob and says, you know, Jacob, I think it's just time for me to do away with you. And so he makes a vow that he's going to kill his own brother. And when Jacob hears of this, he gets out of town. He goes to live with his uncle Laban. And he lives with Laban for 20 years and marries both of Laban's daughters, Rachel and Leah. And he gets lots of cattle and sheep and goats. And he basically does pretty well for himself. But he wears out his welcome with Laban as well. Throughout Jacob's early life, Jacob doesn't get along with people real well. But God is always there for him. And I don't want you to notice what God says to Jacob. First off, when he has to flee from Esau, God says to him, "Behold, I am with you, and will keep you wherever you go, and will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I have done all that I promised you." Now, that's a great promise for God to give to Jacob. He gives this to Jacob when Jacob doesn't have anything more than the shirt on his back. About 20 years later, God appears to Jacob again and says, "Now, Jacob, it's time for you to go home." And this is what he says to him. Now, Jacob heard that the sons of Laban were saying, "Jacob has taken all that our fathers, and what was our the fathers has is gained, and what was our fathers he has gained all his wealth." Jacob saw that Laban did not regard him with favor as before. Then the Lord said to Jacob, "Return to the land of your fathers and to your kindred, and I will be with you." So God again promises Jacob that he will be with him. So Jacob starts on his way home. He has lots of cattle. He has lots of sheep. He sends them all. He actually has two camps. He breaks them up. But on his way back home, he hears that Esau's coming to meet him. But Esau's not coming to meet him just with a couple of people. He's got about 400 guys he's coming to meet him with. And so Jacob is once again afraid. Through Jacob's early life, one of the things that's mentioned, he's often afraid. He was afraid when God appeared to him on his way out of town. He's afraid of Esau. He's afraid of Laban. He seems to be ruled a lot by fear. And you see that in Jacob's reply to God right before Esau comes to meet him. And this is in Genesis 32. And notice what Jacob says. "And Jacob said, O God of my father Abraham, God of my father Isaac, O Lord who said to me," notice he's going to tell God what God, he's going to basically imply that the mess he's in is God's fault, is what he does. He said, "Return to your country and to your kindred, that I may do you good. I'm not worthy at least of all the deeds of steadfast love and faithfulness that you have shown to your servant. For with only my staff I crossed the Jordan, and now I have two camps. Please deliver me from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, that he may come and attack me and the mothers with their children. But you said, I will surely do you good and make your offspring as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for the multitude." So here, he once again is scared. He calls to God, and then he wrestles with God. And this part of Genesis is one of those great stories that's remembered throughout. And notice what it said here in Genesis chapter 32. To lay the groundwork before this, Jacob's already sent everybody ahead. He's scared that Esau is going to wipe him out, so he sends everybody ahead of him, and they all cross the river. And Jacob's left alone. All of his daughter, his daughter and his 12 sons and his two wives and two concubines, they've all left. And he's left alone to face this man. And notice what's said. "And a man wrestled with him until the breaking of day. And when the man saw that he could not prevail against Jacob, he touched the hip of his socket." Jacob's hip was put on a joint as he wrestled with him. "Then he said, let me go, for the day is broken. But Jacob said, I will not let you go unless you bless me. And he said, what is your name? He said, Jacob. And he said, your name shall no longer be Jacob, but Israel. For you have striven with God and with men and have prevailed. Then Jacob said to him, please tell me your name. But he said, what is it you ask my name? And he blessed him." And truly we see Jacob as one that strove with God and with men. And we see that with Abraham too. Abraham was one that walked with God basically for 30 years before, or 25 years before Isaac was born. But during that time, these men didn't always have things so easy for them. Abraham, at one time in his life, actually bargained with God. God had Abraham's nephew Lot had gone down to live in Sodom. And the story, God comes to Abraham and says, you know, those guys down there in Sodom, their sins have become so great that I'm going to wipe out Sodom. You know what Abraham does? He bargains with God. He basically almost wrestles with God at that time. He says, God, if there were 50 good people down there, would you destroy that whole city? And you know what God says? He says, no, if there were 50 good people, I wouldn't destroy that city. And Abraham said, well, what about if there was 45, just five less than 50? For the sake of 45, would you spare that city? And God says, yes, for 45, I'd spare that city. And if you go through the whole story, Abraham gets a little bit bolder. He says, what about 40? What about 30? What about 20? And he keeps bargaining with God. He gets him all the way down to 10. And God said, for the sake of 10, I'll save that whole city. But if you go through the story, you find out there's only three good people in the whole cities of Sodom and Gomorrah. Only three people live from those cities. But you see, Abraham is one that bargains with God. Now we see Jacob, his grandson, one that wrestles with God. These men didn't always have things quite maybe as easy as we like to think of. And they were willing, they tried to even bargain with God at times. And you see that through their lives. But when Jacob wrestled with God, notice what happens in the story. He wrestles with God and God touches his hip and throws it out of joint. So the rest of his life, he's going to walk with a limp. He's going to know his weakness before the Lord. One of the things God does with Jacob is remind him of his weaknesses, but remind him that it is God who provides. And I think it's a good lesson for all of us. Sometimes we think we've got to do everything. How can I do these things on my own? Well, a lot of times we can't. We need to remember our weaknesses. Paul remembered his weakness. If you remember over in Corinthians, Paul says, he had prayed for the Lord to remove a thorn in his flesh. Now, we don't know for sure what Paul prayed for, but some think it was maybe his eyesight being very bad. Others that he didn't have a very good voice or was losing his voice and couldn't preach like he wanted to. But he had a physical weakness before the Lord. And he prayed for the Lord to take it away so he could do great things. And notice what God says to him. My grace is sufficient for you. For my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast the more gladly of my weakness, so that the power of Christ may rest upon me. Sometimes we don't think we're able to do the things God calls us to do. That we are weak and that we need, well, God, how could I do? Somebody else could do that a whole lot better. Paul could see that in his weaknesses, the power of God could be manifested. And we see that in Jacob's life. When God touched Jacob's hip, he was going to walk with a limp the rest of his life, and he'd be reminded that his strength depended upon God and not upon himself. We also see his hunger for God. One of the things he does is he asks God to bless him. He seeks the blessing of God, and he receives that blessing. And he's also reminded, basically, when God asks him, what is your name? And a person's name reflects who they are. And Jacob's name didn't have a real good connotation at that time. He didn't have a good reputation. This was Jacob. He was known as a liar and a swindler. But God changes his name to Israel. He reminds him that he is unworthy, just as we are unworthy. But God can change us, just as he does Jacob. Notice over a couple things as we close the lesson this morning. And these men, they were far from perfect. One of the first things we read about Abraham is going down to Egypt and lying about his wife Sarah and worrying about his own life, even though God had told him he'd be with him. We see in Jacob one who lies and swindles his own brother and his own father. These men weren't perfect, but they walked with God. They had faith. They are mentioned as great men of faith. But they were, in so many ways, like us. They weren't any different from us. They had the same wants and the same passions, same desires as we have. God asked great things of them. And if you look at Abraham and you look at Isaac and Jacob, especially as we're talking this morning, they didn't always know how they were going to do these things. Especially Jacob, he looking at Esau coming, he says, God, you told me to go back. And here's Jason, my brother Esau coming with all these guys to wipe me out. How can I do this, God? Even Abraham, he goes down to Egypt And he, God, you're going to protect me? But, well, maybe I need to just tell a little lie here about Sarah to make sure that Pharaoh doesn't wipe me out. They didn't always know that they could do the things that God called them to do. But they could. And they could because of, if you think about what Abraham, God will provide. God provided for them, and He will provide for us. He calls us to do things that sometimes may seem more than what we're able to do. But God will provide for us. These men walked with God, and by walking with God, He changed their lives. You see that completely with Jacob. The way he starts his life and the way he ends it, you see the way God, when you walk with God, God changes you. It doesn't maybe happen in a day. It doesn't happen in a week. But it happens over a lifetime. God continues to work upon your life. Notice a couple of scriptures as we end. In Ephesians, Paul says these words to us. Now to Him who is able to do far more abundantly than all that we ask or we think, according to the power that is at work within us, to Him be the glory in the church and in Christ throughout all generations. To Him who is able to do more in our lives than we ever can think. He is working within us. When you come to Christ, when you're baptized into Christ, you're baptized into the death of Christ. That means you die to this world. You deny yourself to walk with Him. And when you walk with Him, you receive His Holy Spirit as a gift of the Holy Spirit's within you. And that works within you. Now, I can't tell you exactly how the Holy Spirit works within us, but it does. And God will work within your life every day as you walk with Him to make you into the kind of person that you can be in Him. That's what He did with Abraham. That's what He did with Jacob. And that's what He can do with us. More than we can ever imagine, He will walk with you. And so as we look at Abraham's life, we look at Jacob's life, and they were called to do things that almost seem unimaginable, especially Abraham when he called to offer his own son and the promises of God. But remember that God provided for him, and God will provide for you and I in the same way. God does provide. God does work within us through His Spirit as we walk with Him. This morning, think about the story of these men. And it's just as the Hebrew writer brings out, these men can be a witness to you. You can look at their lives, and it can help you in your life. Things weren't always easy for them. They won't always be easy for us. But we have a God who provides for us. We who have a God that promises, just like He did to them, I will be with you. And that promises to us too, because we have the promises of Abraham. We have a God who will be with us. Regardless of where we go or what we do, He is a God that's with us as long as we walk in obedience to Him. And we see that in the great faith of Abraham. And we see that in the faith of Jacob as well. Even though these men, as we've seen, weren't perfect, but they walked with God. This morning, think about your life. If you're walking with God. If you've never started that walk, there'll never be a better time than this morning to start that walk. If you have started that walk, but you haven't been faithful to it, come back to your Lord. He's always there. Our God is always faithful to bring you back into His fold. If you need to come in any way, won't you come as together we stand and sing.